We're talking about mask research here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Does it matter what type of mask you wear? And what about the one in an adorable pattern that your friend or family member made for you and sent in a care package with a pattern and instructions on how to make more? Different types of masks offer different levels of protection. What questions do you have about surgical masks versus cloth masks? We're at 800-642-1234. Patricia Fabian is an associate professor of environmental health at Boston University School of Public Health, where she studies environmental health problems, including respiratory disease transmission. Patricia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So the public health messaging around masks has been, if you wear one, you're protecting other people, but not necessarily protecting yourself. Is that true?
No, that's not true. It's been something interesting to listen on the news, this focus. You can think of masks as two-way filters. So if you're the person wearing them, it's reducing the number of particles that you are emitting. And again, if when you're breathing in, then it's reducing the number of particles that you are breathing in. How effective that is depends on how good the mask is, but it does work both ways.
And so when we say something like, well, what about a regular fabric mask? That can have so many different dimensions, I would understand, if you put that piece of material through the research and the rigor of testing.
Well, so there's a couple ways to think about it. In occupational settings, for example, you really need a mask that works 100% or close to 100%. But in this pandemic situation, we're trying to do everything that we can to reduce transmission. So that means that even if you wear a cloth mask or a surgical mask that isn't 100% effective, it still is doing a lot to reduce contamination of the environment, exposure for yourself, exposure for others, even if it's not 100%.
Well, you know, it's interesting because back in January, February, it seems health experts were downplaying mask wearing. The CDC, the WHO in general urged people not to wear masks. But then there was this complete reversal on mask wearing by the time we got into April. What was at the heart of this flip-flop on mask wearing in public?
I don't actually know what the flip-flopping was about. For people who study infectious disease transmission, respiratory particle physics, wearing masks is something we've been studying for a very long time. We've studied it with influenza. So I think I'm not sure why it took so long for guidelines to catch up on that. I think there was also the sense that if it wasn't something like an N95 or better, then there wasn't any point in wearing it. And so the science of just reduction and what that could do to transmission on a population level wasn't there. But scientists always knew masks work. They work to reduce, even if it's not 100%.
What about surgical masks in terms of what protections they provide?
Compared to cloth masks,
yes.
So I think in general, and you've seen, for example, the WHO and CDC guidelines, they'll say face coverings, cloth masks. It doesn't, from a population perspective, so a person on the street going into a store, they will all work around the same. So there's varying levels of effectiveness. But in general, again, since the goal is to reduce exposure and reduce contamination, any face covering that you wear is good. I do think there's been research showing initially they had recommended also, for example, a bandana. I think those have now been shown to maybe not be quite as good at capturing particles. But even that is better than nothing if that's what you have. Again, the goal is to reduce.
Let's look at some of these studies that have come out. There was this study using hamsters found that animals in a cage protected by a layer of surgical masks were less likely to get infected with COVID than animals without the layer of protection. And the hamsters in the cage with masks that did get COVID got less sick than those in the open cage. What did you learn there from that study?
So this was a study out of China. And there's a couple of things, as you described, they put hamsters in two basically boxes, and then they moved air from the box of infected hamsters over into the box of uninfected hamsters. That was sort of the first experiment, and a lot of the hamsters got sick in that case, I think 67%. And then what they did is they put mask-like material in between the two chambers where the hamsters were and repeated the experiment, and a much lower number of hamsters got sick. Not only did less hamsters get sick, they weren't as sick as the hamsters in the first box. So this is bringing up a different theory. So one is around the reduction of particles, right, of virus particles that you get exposed to, and the idea that the dose is the poison in some ways, that the more you are exposed to more virus particles, it's possible that you'll get sicker. And so putting on masks reduces particles in two ways, right? If everybody wears one, then there's less virus in the environment. If you wear one, you're also breathing in less of whatever is in the environment. And that potentially could lead to, even if you got sick, it could either be that you become asymptomatic or that you don't have such severe symptoms.
We're talking with Patricia Fabian, who is an associate professor of environmental health at Boston University School of Public Health, talking about the health effects of putting on a mask. With your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Sam, who is joining us from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on. So curious, over the past couple months, with all of the different organizations like CDC, WHO, and other researchers, kind of like what you were saying, reversing a lot when it comes to masks, either not supposed to wear masks to not really just recommending masks, but we should legally be mandating masks. I'm kind of curious, as somebody who wants to understand the research, what things should I be looking for to know what research is worth my time, rather than get confused, and or how can I know that, for example, your research at Boston University, is distinguishable and legitimate as compared to maybe other research that would go contrary?
Sam, thank you. Questioning the efficacy of mask research and what is reliable. Patricia?
That's a great question. I think the whole world is struggling with trying to figure out what to believe and where to read things. From a science perspective, journals is where, peer-reviewed journals is where a lot of the science is published. I do think still organizations like CDC and WHO are places to read. We sort of as a public need to understand that things will change, right? The reason they're changing is because we knew almost nothing about this virus in January. We didn't know that people could be asymptomatic, so they could be infected and be transmitting but have no symptoms. And as we find those things out, then you need to kind of change the guidance. And as scientists, we need to be flexible that way. As health organizations need to be flexible that way. And then as public, we need to understand that there's no sort of 100% answer to anything. And so all I can say is reading from scientific journals, reading summaries from sections of the news that are science that have a good reputation, and just thinking, listening to public health officials, and being tolerant of the fact that what you may be told today, as we find out more information, might change, and that's okay. It's okay for us to be changing how we're adapting, how we might clean things in our house. Hopefully at one point the directions will be to kind of relax what restrictions are, cleaning things are, masks are. But for now, and until we find out, I think, it's fine to kind of have changing guidelines.
Sam, thanks. Let's bring in Alex now in Spring Green with a question. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. I'm from Spring Green, Wisconsin, and I was certified in HAZWOPER. And my instructor, when I took the class to get the certification, said that when you're using a mask, it increases your breathing rate. And if it's not tightly sealed, more particles come in from the sides of the mask than not wearing a mask at all.
Alex, thank you for that question. Patricia, what about the seal on the mask? Couldn't that happen?
So that's a good point, and this relates to occupational health, where if you work, for example, in an environment where there's toxic particles and you have to get your test fitting so that the mask exactly seals around your face, what we're talking about in terms of cloth masks and surgical masks, that's never going to be the goal, and it's never going to get to that kind of a seal. Having sort of a rubber, this is what in occupational health, where you have HEPA filters even on those types of masks. So what you're saying is true. If it doesn't seal for those types of masks in this occupational setting, if it doesn't seal 100%, you will get leakage through the sides. That's occupational. On a population level, it's pretty impossible to think that we'll all be wearing those types of masks all day. So again, the goal is to reduce exposure, not to eliminate it, which in an occupational setting really is around eliminating exposure.
How often should you wash your mask, in a cloth mask, for instance?
That's a good question. It really depends on how often you wear it and what you're doing with it when you wear it. For us, we have a spot in our house where everybody has their spot where they put their mask, and we try to wash it at least once a week. But really what we use them for is going out occasionally to the grocery store or taking walks. If you're going to work, you know, every day wearing a mask, you might wear one or two, and you probably want to wash those at the end of the day because you've been wearing them all day.
We're talking about the latest on mask research with Patricia Fabian, an associate professor of environmental health at Boston University. What are your questions about the science of wearing masks to slow the spread of infectious disease? How have you adjusted to the new norm of wearing a mask in public? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Boston University environmental health researcher Patricia Fabian. We're talking about the effects of masking up when in public and how it could be driving down rates of overall infection. Let's bring in another call now. Dwayne is joining us from Weston. Hi, Dwayne.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
So we're, you know, dedicated firm believers of wearing masks, but what I noticed is like in China, just from watching news footage over the years, you know, when events are happening, you always see people in China wearing masks for years and years on subways or in the streets. And then secondly, the reduction in the yearly flu, I'd be interested. Can't wait to hear the statistics if that's going to drop dramatically. Are the regular influenza yearly, you know, like how it'll affect other viruses, and you know, might be a lot less people going to the doctors for a lot of other things. And then third thing, I notice when I'm out wearing a mask, the eye-to-eye contact you make with people, at least with me, is just way more. You just really look at people's eyes more with this mask. Something I noticed. But those are my three things.
Dwayne, thank you for bringing those observations. And the middle one there, Patricia, you have researched how mask wearing affects the spread of influenza. Can you tell us what you found?
Yes. So to the question about whether we're going to see less flu this year around the world, it's likely that we're going to see those numbers drop because similar activities as for COVID, meaning being close to people, you know, not wearing masks, going out when you're sick, et cetera, we've reduced all that. So it's likely that we'll see a reduction in flu infections, assuming other things like vaccination rates, et cetera, don't change. With regards to the research that we've done in our lab, it really was pretty similar to what we're doing with COVID, is trying to understand if you wear a surgical mask, how will that reduce the amount of virus that you put out into the environment? And one important thing we were trying to find out is, does it reduce small particles the same as larger particles? So what we did is we recruited people who had the flu. We asked them to breathe into a specially designed machine that counted and separated the particles. And what we found is that surgical masks, reduced large particles, and by large, bigger than 5 micrometers in diameter, by a lot, by around 25-fold, so 25 times less. Compared to the smaller particles, it really only reduced it for about 3-fold. And so that has implications. Again, that was for influenza, but if you kind of transfer it to really any respiratory infection like SARS, you can argue that wearing a surgical mask, and this has been part of the basis for the science that tells us wear masks, is that it reduces the number of particles that you put out into the environment.
And you can apply that then to other viruses and certainly airborne things that would be coming at someone, you know, regardless of what they are. You know, Duane mentioned another thing, that in China and some other countries, mask wearing has been part of the culture, if you will, and it is very new here in the U.S. And Duane is noticing the interpersonal contact, the more contact, eye contact that he is making with passersby. What do you observe there about mask wearing?
So, in complete agreement, China has for years, or people from China have for years been wearing masks. I was lucky enough to be in Hong Kong working on an influenza study, and anybody who was sick either stayed home or wore a mask. And this comes from the fact that they have gone through epidemics before. You know, importantly, SARS-1, right, was one. And so that changes the culture. It will change our culture. I think we will see people wearing masks far into the future, even after we're not so worried about COVID, because the social stigma about it will go down. It will be seen as a responsibility that if you are feeling sick, part of your responsibility is to not get other people sick. So I think probably we will be wearing masks on subways and train stations, et cetera, far into the future. I actually think that's a good thing.
Patricia Fabian is an associate professor of environmental health at Boston University, talking about the protection masks provide in helping to stop the spread of the virus. Let's bring in Steve now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I go to a health club. I won't mention which one, but I see people on treadmills and elliptical that are working really hard and sweating really, really hard, getting in shape. And some are wearing masks, some take them off. And I know, you know, obviously the more moisture you get on a cloth mask, the more restrictive airflow is. And I'm just wondering the guest recommendation on the safety for the individual who is, you know, working out really hard wearing a mask.
Steve, thanks. Patricia?
Yeah, I think my recommendation was to put a bunch of masks in your backpack or your pocket, because it's really important to just wear it the whole time. When you exercise, and we've done research on this as well, if you're breathing normally, you exhale certain numbers of particles. If you breathe faster, obviously it's going to be more particles. If you take deep breaths and long exhalations, it's more particles. So even though it's tough to exercise with a mask, I think my recommendation would be take a bunch of masks so you can switch them out if they become uncomfortable. But taking them off, you know, puts other people at risk and yourself, because you're also breathing air, unfiltered air.
What happens if that mask gets soiled or gets really damp with perspiration?
Well, what will happen is that it probably will block it a little more, and so you'll have more air leaking through the sides, which means it probably won't be as effective and it will be pretty uncomfortable. So again, if what you have is a bag for dirty masks and a bag for clean masks, and you take several when you go work out, you can sort of quickly switch them out and both have the benefit of the mask still working as well as it's going to work and not be uncomfortable, right? And you can just kind of be switching them off.
Patricia, so many people have been making masks at home and distributing them to family and friends. Is there research on fabric masks and how that research you're following on these homemade masks?
Yeah, so I think there's been a couple papers out on what the effectiveness is. I think at the end of the day, it has to be a combination of reducing enough particles and a good enough fit and comfortable enough fit that you will wear it for as long as you need to wear it. So I think the latest paper that I read was recommending using quilting cotton as being something that's kind of a tighter weave, but lets you breathe enough and comfortable enough on your face. I'm sure that will continue changing. And I know that there's research looking into different materials that might also be comfortable, but have other types of properties where they could capture particles.
Do you think there will be any attempts to standardize the kinds of fabric used for these masks that are on the market that people can buy?
I think probably eventually that will be the case. But again, you will always have leakage around these masks.
Mm-hmm.
So if the goal is to reduce, make them comfortable enough for people to wear, there will be a wide range of what fits that description. And again, it's about reducing on a population level exposure, not eliminating. So I think a wide range of materials and mask designs will probably fit that.
It's interesting that you say that at the end of this crisis that the U.S. will see much more mask wearing. Do you see any other pivotal moments here in public health that we will take away from this crisis?
So many. I think one thing that's been really amazing for me to see as a public health professional is people's interest in public health. So many more people are going to be studying it. It's a field that maybe doesn't really get as much attention and funding as, for example, medicine. But we're seeing with an epidemic like this, how important public health is, not just for infection, but also for support systems and social networking, et cetera. So that is a big pivot into saying public health is important. We'll have to invest in this for at a city level, you know, at a state level, at a country level. And that's really gratifying as a public health professional to see.
Well, Patricia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Patricia Fabian is an associate professor of environmental health at Boston University, where she studies environmental health problems. We are hearing, by the way, the song So Fresh, So Clean by Outkast. The song's chorus is about 20 seconds, or how long we're supposed to wash our hands with soap or sanitizer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. So clean.